Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio. Welcome to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Ben.
My name is Noel.
And today we are joined, as always, with our super producer, Casey LaBouche-Pegram. Give it up for him, folks.
I just did a weird thing, Ben. I said my name the way I say it on our other show, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, because you didn't start off with a pithy little scene like you usually do.
That's right.
It threw me.
Ah, yes. Well, It's a different recording time for us, you know. We've been doing a lot of weird scheduling shuffling, and like I'm not in my afternoon bin yet.
You're not in your history zone?
Not quite. But we're in a bit of a spooky zone, and we're talking about an adventure. I do have something that does relate slightly. Today's show concerns a pivotal role of women in aviation. And I don't know if I ever mentioned this to you, but one of my grandmothers was actually a pilot or trained as one in World War II.
I did not know that, Ben.
It's a true story, Noel. It's a true story. She was a teacher, and in the part of the world where she resided, one of the local programs that the government was supporting was to train teachers, some teachers, to be pilots in World War II. I don't think she ever shot anyone out of the sky.
No, that's okay. I mean, you can still be a badass and not have any kills under your belt. I mean, being a pilot in any kind of war situation is got to be absolutely harrowing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, even comparing World War II to the modern day, the planes are just so much more dangerous, and a dogfight is kind of like a knife fight. You know, I don't know if you guys have ever, Casey, have you ever been in a knife fight that you'd be willing to talk about on air?
None that I'm willing to disclose on air. That's, yeah.
Not even in your private life as LaBouche?
Well, like I said, that I'm willing to disclose on air. So you can think what you want to think.
But you know what they say, though, you guys? They say never bring a knife to a dog fight.
That is true.
Or a dog to a knife fight, because that would just be cruel.
Yeah, that's no good.
No, it's definitely no good. Casey on the case. Speaking of which, I am absolutely thrilled to be wearing one of our patented Casey on the Case t-shirts right now, featuring a delightful photo of young Casey Pegram in his Macy's catalog modeling days.
Yeah, like Macy's or JCPenney
one of those,
yeah.
You can get one for yourself by going to tpublic.com/ridiculous history, where we have an assortment of fine garments or mouse pads or what have you available.
Perhaps an Upton's ad, if anybody remembers Upton's.
Upton's?
Yeah.
Was that like
I remember Upton's. It's a department store similar to Dillard's or Macy's.
Yeah, it's just another one of those anchor stores at the mall, but mm-hmm. I think they went away.
Also, for anyone who's thinking, oh man, I would love a shirt like that. Why don't I have one right now? Don't worry, folks. I'm thinking the same thing. I got a little snaked, so I'm going to have to find one for myself. I'm right there with you. Today's story, the protagonist of today's story, deserve t-shirts all their own, at the very least. Our story does take place in World War II. It does not take place in the U.S. It takes place in the Nazi-occupied Soviet Union, where German soldiers had a very real and very profound fear of witches, but maybe not the kind of witches you might automatically imagine, right?
Well, no, maybe not, but it certainly was maybe tying into kind of a cultural fear. You know, witches loomed large in German culture, right? Hansel and Gretel, surely others, you know? Germans are notoriously afraid of witches. Everybody knows that. But you're right. They were afraid of a very particular type of witches who were members of the all-female night bomber regiment, which was part of the Soviet Air Forces. And these women flew over 30,000 missions over the course of 3 years, dropped 23,000 tons of bombs on the Nazis, and they did all of their flights under the cover of night, earning them the nickname, the Night Witches.
And this name did not arrive entirely because of the time during which they chose to make these bomb runs. It also came about because of their approach. They were very difficult to detect because they used a very dangerous strategy. Their planes were made of plywood and canvas. And the best way that the German soldiers could know there was a night witch in the area or scouting them out was they would hear the soft whoosh of a plywood and canvas plane. So it's literally like someone silently flying and then hearing a whoosh followed by a cavalcade of explosions. So each of these planes had a pilot and a navigator, all female. Let's talk a little bit about how they came to be. So June of 2019 marks the 77th anniversary of the beginning of the Night Witches. And there's a lot of context that pours into this because in June of 1941, Axis powers pushed into the USSR using the largest invading force in the history of war. Not the history of Russian war, not the history of European war, the history of human war.
That's like saying the history of the world.
Exactly, exactly. For example, the infamous Operation Barbarossa saw about 4 million troops invade Russia from the West. And because of this operation, Russian leaders began to worry that Moscow itself might be overtaken.
Yeah, it's true. And this was, in fact, one of the most bloody and violent, terrible military actions, considered atrocities, known for its atrocities in World War II. These atrocities were perpetrated against the Russians by the Nazis. And the soldiers, the male soldiers of the Soviet Union, were heading up the front lines when the forces from the Axis powers invaded and overtook the capital of Russia.
Right. World War II losses of the Soviet Union from all related causes were about 27 million people. And that's a ballpark estimate, counting civilian and military.
I mean, they were essentially treated like cannon fodder, right? They were treated as utterly expendable by the Allied forces, right?
Right. So the USSR had several big things going for it in World War II. One, the terrain is notoriously dangerous and inhospitable. And second, they had a lot of manpower. So the idea was maybe they could overwhelm opponents through the sheer force of numbers alone. But this is where we get into things like scorched earth strategies, the kind of mentality that says, similar to the people in Fukushima or Chernobyl who killed themselves, committed suicide to save the greater population. These people are fighting for what they see as the greater good. Everyone is involved. No one is not at war in Russia at this time. And from the very beginning of the USSR involvement in the war, there is already an active female Soviet pilot. You may have heard her called the Russian Amelia Earhart. Her name is Colonel Marina Raskova. And while she was an active pilot, she started receiving letters from women all across Russia who said, look, I want to join the war. I want to help any way I can. Let's fight these Nazis. Let's get these Germans off our land. And many of them would say, you know, I work as in a support role, right? Like I work at a factory making armaments, or I work at a hospital or something, but I want to be on the front lines.
They didn't end up being quite on the front lines because those male Soviet soldiers we talked about who were on the front lines were getting creamed. So the Red Army commanders were absolutely desperate and needed something to help turn the tide of battle. So in October of 1941, Stalin himself posted Raskova to head up an all-female squadron, air squadron to be specific. And this is a historical thing because this was the only air squadron that was, according to records, all-female. And it was the 588th Night Bomber Regiment.
And the pilots weren't the only women in the regiment. Everyone in the 588th was female, from the pilots to the commanders to the mechanics.
That's right. So this team began to assemble in 1942. Their ages ranged from 17 to 26 years old, and they took up residence in a small village by the name of Ingalls, where they started training. Raskova personally headed up this training, and she did not take any crap from anybody. She was a very hard-nosed instructor and commander.
Yes. There's a great article about this called The Little-Known Story of the Night Witches, an all-female force in World War II, published in Vanity Fair as well as Atlas Obscura by author Eric Grundhauser. And in this, he depicts the way that Raskova immediately immersed her trainees into the program. They had to shave their heads, right? They had to wear size 42 boots. Supply chain issues were already in full effect at this time in Russia's military history. So they didn't have custom uniforms. They had to wear these bulky, ill-fitting uniforms that were made for dude soldiers. And one of the pilots said it was kind of a rough landing for her on the first day. She said, "We didn't recognize ourselves in the mirror. We saw boys there." And the problems with adjusting to the pre-existing supplies didn't stop with the uniforms, unfortunately. It continued on to the planes. They were flying these planes called Polikarpov PO2s. These are two-seated, open cockpit biplanes. These are the plywood ones I was mentioning earlier with the canvas stretched over them. They have absolutely no armor. They're already obsolete by the 40s. These are the kind of things that really incentivize you to fly quietly and in a sneaky way, because one shot and boom, you're gone. Kind of like my old Saturn SC car I had. Yeah. Wrap that one around a tree.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you okay?
No.
Okay, well, that's fair. These are probably unrelated, though, right?
These are unrelated. This had nothing to do with World War II.
That's fair. Now, Ben, remember the Red Baron?
Yes.
Was he exclusively a Peanuts character, or was that actually a historical fighter pilot?
Guy makes great pizza.
That's also true. But seriously, I really don't know.
There's pepperoni.
No, the Red Baron. He was a Prussian fighter pilot. The idea of a plane being made of wood and canvas is unusual, but it wasn't that unusual, right? Because this was like cheap material. It was lightweight. Again, it was quiet.
Right, exactly. And in previous conflicts, something like this style of biplane aircraft would have been fine. It's just so many years had passed, and there was already better technology out there. These planes were also pretty slow. And because they had a slower stall speed than the standard German fighters at the time, it made it tough for the Axis or the German forces to actually shoot them. It's kind of like when there are two cars racing, and one of them maybe, let's say, is a truck with a big block engine and it can pick up speed, but once it gets up to a high speed, it has a tough time slowing down. So what would have ordinarily been a disadvantage for these aircraft actually made them tougher to hit. Also, again, these are exposed cockpits, and this is Russia.
Oh, my God. I can only imagine. That's why I picture the Red Baron. There's also a detail about these planes that did not give them a particularly good advantage. They had to fly pretty low, which would make sense for them to be flying at night. But, gosh, during a regular dogfight during the day, it seems very, very challenging. You'd be kind of like a sitting duck. But here's a question, too, Ben. These open cockpits, like, they wore some kind of, like, protection over their faces, right, to keep them from—
Yeah. Sure, goggles and probably the whole nine, the leather cap,
little skull cap thing, right?
With the strap that you would buckle under your chin. Yeah, I would imagine so.
But here's the thing. The women of the 588th were unthwarted. They were absolutely ready to go and do whatever it took to pitch into the war effort. So after their first bombing run, which took place on June 1942, they absolutely— not obliterated, but definitely slowed down the Nazi forces with these overnight bombing runs and continued till the end of the war.
Yeah, yeah. At their height, so it started first bombing at June 8th, 1942, and at the height of their strength, they had 42-person crews, each which were flying, get this, multiple runs as soon as the sun set. The record would be like 18 runs a night. Why would you make 18 incredibly dangerous bombing runs, you may ask? It's because the planes could only carry 6 bombs at a time. So as soon as they dropped those 6, provided they survived, they flew back, got another 6 bombs, and then flew back again. this meant that there was also a tightly controlled weight limit. That's part of why they flew at lower altitudes, but that's also the reason they could not bring parachutes.
Jeez. That is pretty bold. And using that cover of night was crucial. There was no way around it. The three planes would leave at one time, and then two would kind of act as almost decoys, or they would draw fire, enemy fire, and then the last one would do the bomb run. And they also had to, like, Prius style, like, kill their engines so that they would just glide over it before they dropped their payload.
And then start the engine again.
And then start the engine and get out of there. I mean, absolute badassery.
Yeah, and there's some psyop going on here as well, because the whooshing sound, we already mentioned, that freaked the German soldiers out. But they are also the source of the name Night Witches. Once they had learned that this was indeed a crew of female combatants and bombers, the misogyny kicked in, and it was even more injurious to them on some level that they were getting creamed by female forces instead of Russian dudes. And the Germans started, you know, in the fog of war, so much strange speculation thrives. The Germans started saying that the Soviet forces were changing the women somehow, experimenting on them to give them, quote, the night vision of a cat.
That's right. The Germans would have referred to them natively as the Nachthexen or the night witches. And one of them, Nadezhda Popova, I'm going to go with that one, she flew roughly 850 missions, and she received the title of Hero of the Soviet Union. And in Albert Axel's book, Greatest Russian War Stories, 1941 to 1945, she's quoted as saying, "This was nonsense, of course. What we had were clever, educated, very talented girls."
And fighting against this, for some reason, tell me what you think about this, folks. For some reason, this gives me a League of Their Own vibe.
Mm-hmm.
In a much more dangerous field, because they had to deal with fighting a war against ruthless opponents, but they also had to deal with misogyny from people who should have been supporting them. Members of the Soviet military were still very dismissive of the idea of women flying in general, let alone in combat. They wouldn't give these soldiers, these pilots, these mechanics, anyone on the 588th, the credit they deserved at the time. And the inspiring thing here, especially for any of us listening who have been in a situation where you have to confront institutionalized misogyny, these women doubled down. They didn't care. They were not cowed. They did not say, oh, no, let's let the dudes fly the planes or whatever. They said, yes, we're women. We're pilots. We're killers. We do what we want. And if you have a tough time with it, go pout somewhere else.
Yeah, but unfortunately, the brass, you know, the Russian military brass, weren't super kind to these women. And I think there was even like a incentive in among the Germans too to give an Iron Cross, which I think was one of the highest awards you can get in the German army, if you shot down one of these women. So they were hated on both sides. Just kind of a rough situation to be in.
Mm-hmm. Fortunately, while the wheels of justice grind slow, they grind exceedingly fine. And the members of the Night Witches were eventually recognized, such as the example you had mentioned earlier, Noel Popova, who got the title of Hero of the Soviet Union and then multiple medals. By the end of World War II, the 588th had flown around 30,000 bombing raids, which translates to 23,000 tons of explosives or munitions. They also lost a lot of people. They lost 30 pilots during the war, which is an unbelievably low number when you consider what those planes were made of, their technical constraints, and the fact that these people were often using the same strategy repeatedly, not over the course of the war, but sometimes as much as 18 times a night. You know what I mean? Like, how many times, if you're in charge of the searchlight on the German side, how many times do you fall for that two planes fly in opposite directions without checking where the bombs are coming from, you know?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. They weren't even given their own sized uniforms. Mm-hmm. They had to take kind of tattered hand-me-downs from other soldiers who, I don't know if they had, like, died or what, but that'd be pretty morbid. But no, they were absolutely treated like second-class citizens. You know, this reminds me of something. Have you seen that video that compares men's soccer and women's soccer? And it's like a scene from American Sniper where it's Bradley Cooper as the sniper, and it shows him, like, you know, cocking back the gun and, like, looking through the scope, and then you see him shooting at a male soccer player, and they fall down and, like, ooh, grab their knees and start, like, cringing and crying, because apparently in male soccer, dudes are just always taking dives because it's, yeah, like, it gives them an edge, or they are able to get, like, penalty. I don't know. I'm not
because
a sports
unless
guy.
Unless the referee absolutely sees what happened, they can't say you're faking.
There you go.
It is technically, I think, and someone tell us more about this. I believe it's technically on the books illegal to do that, but it's very tough to prove it.
There's lots of footage of it. And then compare that with footage of women's soccer where they literally stand up and spit their teeth out and just keep, you know, marching forward. There is absolutely an element to that in this story. So Popova, who we spoke about earlier in an article from The Atlantic, there's a great, great quote from her talking about walking away from a bombing raid with 42 bullet holes in her little wooden plane. You would think it would have just shredded the thing, Ben. Like, I mean, God, to take a hit like that in the air in a plane made of wood and, like, canvas, mm-hmm, that is just absolutely terrifying. I can't imagine having that level of bravery.
Right. And let's also consider how young a lot of these people were. They were not experienced soldiers. They were ranging in age from 17 to 26. And many of us who have had military service in the background may say, well, I've met some people in their mid-20s who unfortunately have a ton of a very, very harrowing experience fighting domestically or in abroad. That's true. But at this time, in 1941— until Stalin gave these orders, no other nation officially allowed women to engage in combat. Previously, women could help transfer planes and ammunition, after which they would say, all right, it's time for the boys to take over or whatever. And when the Night Witches did this, again, we cannot overemphasize how it was a crappy gig.
Absolutely.
It was a crappy gig. They didn't even get things like radar, guns, and radios. They had to use rulers, stopwatches, flashlights, pencils.
Well, and you know, and not to poo-poo the Soviet Union or anything too much, that's not what we're here to do. But if you have read about the story of Chernobyl, you realize that a lot of the equipment that the folks had were substandard. They didn't have enough radiation suits. They didn't have meters that even reached the levels of contamination, ooh, that were present in some of these situations. So that seems to be sort of a legacy thing, having, you know, kind of substandard equipment.
Yes. Oh, and I want to clarify there, when we said six bombs apiece, that's six bombs per raid, not six bombs per plane. The planes could each only carry two bombs at a time, one under each wing. So when three planes flew out, that was a total of six bombs they could drop, while the other two members of the flight or the raid were running scrimmage or making a distraction there. They also had, this was really cool, this is something I couldn't find in full yet, and I'd love to hear if someone else has found this.
The commandments?
Uh-huh, the 12 commandments of the Night Witches. The one that we found, and the first one was, be proud that you are a woman. There are 11 others, and we've got to find them. The last flight of the Night Witches took place around May 4th, 1945. At this time, they flew within 37 miles or 60 kilometers to everybody in any country other than what, the U.S., Namibia, and Myanmar. They got 37 miles or 60 kilometers close to Berlin, and this was 3 days before Germany officially surrendered. We do know that the Germans had two theories about why these women were successful. Spoiler alert, neither of those theories have anything to do with their ability as pilots or as professionals. The first theory is that they have been given these special injections and experiments that turned them into people with supervision. And the second was that they were all criminals who were masters at stealing, like the idea of the Russian thief in law, and had been sent to the front line as punishment. So they were conscripted hardcore criminals. That's the only way they could get away with these cunning, brazen acts.
And during that really pretty brief 4-year period, 41 to 45, the Night Witches operated, they lost 30 pilots, and then the 23 pilots, not all of them, but 23 of the remaining pilots, including Popova, who we talked about earlier, were given that very high honor of heroes of the Soviet Union. Interestingly enough, the squad was never disbanded. And it actually just was given a new name and continued on. And it was called the much less intriguing sounding 46th Taman Guards Night Bomber Aviation Regiment, which continued to be a mainstay in the Soviet Union's mixed gender forces.
And we should also mention that they weren't just raining death. They also performed 155 supply drops of food and ammo to Soviet forces. And here's one of the last facts I found. Let's file this under that's a kicker. Despite being the most highly decorated unit in the Soviet Air Force during the war, after they were disbanded and became part of this other grouping, there was this big Victory Day parade in Moscow, and the Night Witches were not included because, according to the management, their planes were too slow.
But that's like the whole point, man. That's not their fault.
I know.
They were forced to use those planes. They were given the leftovers.
Maybe they should have had the parade at night. I don't know.
Seriously.
To keep it on brand.
Aren't parades pretty slow usually, though? I mean, I don't see how that would be a detractor.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never organized a Victory Day parade after a war. Although I do want to go to New Orleans and hire my own parade. Do you know you could do that? I told you that, right?
No, what?
Yeah, next time I'm in New Orleans, I think parade prices are incredibly reasonable in New Orleans. And you can, especially in the off season, you can pay a group of people a not particularly princely sum and they'll just do a parade for you.
How much are we talking?
A few hundred, yeah.
And does this include floats?
No, this would be, I think when we're talking a few hundred, we're talking about just the musicians.
Okay.
Which I think is great.
Oh, that like makes, a second line parade.
It feels like a better parade.
Got it. That would be a lot more fun. I don't need a float that's in the shape of my giant head.
No. Custom floats, you're getting into Mardi Gras territory. I don't know. What about, Casey, would you ever have a parade? Would you ever purchase a parade for yourself?
No, definitely not.
For someone else then?
Yeah, maybe for somebody else. If they did something really, really special, maybe. Yeah.
Casey on the case. I am going to embarrass the hell out of you when we get to New Orleans, Casey. Just forget about it and act surprised later.
Will do.
I think that's all we got for today, right, Ben?
Yeah. So ends our tale of the heroic Night Witches, one of the chapters of World War II history that I think is very familiar to a lot of our Russian listeners, but maybe news to some of us in the West. We want to hear your stories of other World War II heroes or strange tales that you think your fellow listeners would enjoy. You can find us on Facebook at Ridiculous Historians. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah, and if you want to find us individually on Instagram, I hang out with my kid and occasionally travel, mainly domestically, but I'm hoping to get out of the country one of these days, too, so I can match Ben's sick Instagram adventures. But my slightly more underwhelming adventures are at How Now Noel Brown.
I think you're beating yourself up there a little bit, Noel.
And it's a thing I do.
Circumstances will probably find both of us overseas sooner than you think. In the meantime, you can find me getting kicked into and out of various places at Ben Bolin, named in what I would only describe as a burst of creativity. But hey, guys, you might be saying, I don't really like the social meads. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, those aren't my cup of vodka or cup of...
meads.
There we go. But I do have an email. I got around to that. So can I just contact you guys that way? We have good news for you. You can email us directly. We are...
Ridiculous at iHeartRadio.com. Big thanks to our super producer, Casey Pegram, as always, Alex Williams, who composed our theme, Christopher Hasiotis, friend of the show, friend inside of our hearts.
Gabe Luzier, also Yves Jeffcoat, who will be on our show pretty soon, spoiler alert. And we'd like to welcome Ryan Barish.
Welcome to the family, Ryan Barish, who will be helping us with some research moving forward. See you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.